Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
To remind you that 60% of sales on Amazon come from independent sellers, here's John from Devil Dog Pet Company.
We run our family business from Sterling Heights, Michigan, but we can reach customers all over the country thanks to Amazon. Good boy.
Shop small business on Amazon.
This is a segment that I look forward to each and every week. I told Rob to go out, and I told Rob to scour the interwebs to get us some Baltimore sports talk. As you guys know, the Chiefs pulled out their belt and commenced a whipping on the Baltimore Ravens Sunday at Arrowhead. So I can only imagine the frustration of Baltimore sports fans as they watch the Chiefs once again take belt to backside against the Baltimore Ravens. So Rob has made 5 cuts. He has scoured the post game. He scoured the morning show, the afternoon show. Let's get right to it. This is Baltimore Sports Talk for our friends over at 105.7 The Fan.
You know, we invested heavy in our offense to build around Maul, but like these past few years, it's just like we've been just getting by with our trenches. It's just disappointing because we come into the season, especially this season, with so much expectation. Oh, they're going to be this, they're going to be that. And it's like, damn, yo, we starting the season off like this, like it hurt. You feel me? Just to sit there and watch, like, painful. Like,
it's painful. He said that on the radio?
Oh, it was very much heard. The host, to his credit, goes, whoops, I think I missed the dump button.
No, you missed
you
it
missed
for
it.
Sure.
Swing and a miss.
He missed it.
He started out so normal and then got so angry at the end.
I mean, his reaction time worse than the Ravens' defense. Just slow to the ball is what it was. All right, that's one fan. I mean, if that's the kind of if that's how we're starting things off, this is good. Here's another fan of the Baltimore Ravens after they got whipped by the Chiefs.
I'm glad to hear that it's kind of shifting back to the coaches here a little bit in the conversation. I actually feel, I think the big issue is trust in the team, trust in Harbaugh. I think he might have lost the locker room a little bit, and I don't think that the guys are out there, you know, not playing for him on purpose or anything like that. But watching these games, man, I just think back to Mark Ingram, big trust, how good the vibe of the team was for those couple of years and even those last couple of years before this year, you know, real slow start. I think you've got guys out there that just don't trust the people in front of them, don't trust the people behind them.
Whenever you start to have the conversation about losing the locker room and we haven't gotten to October at that point, it's not going well for the Ravens. And if there's one thing that you trust Harbaugh to do, especially given his track record, his pedigree, he's one of the best coaches in the league to at least keep the locker room intact. At least at a minimum. I can't speak to if they've lost the locker room or not, but I do think you can be very critical of Harbaugh about the effort that you saw the Ravens have against the Chiefs. They just looked like they were going through the motions from every single level. I think the Chiefs punched the Ravens in the mouth. I don't think the Ravens wanted anything to do with it. I think the Ravens quietly tapped out on Sunday against the Chiefs. Here is a fan that noticed the exact same thing that I noticed about the Ravens.
All right, I'm disappointed and disgusted, man. Okay. You know what I mean? As far, I don't blame Harbaugh. He's got 50 head cases and 50-some drama queens to deal with. And if you're a professional, you don't give up and fake injuries. You don't give up and just fake injuries. Mahomes would have been out there hopping around on one leg. So that's basically all I really got to say, you know?
That is the part about this that is very, very difficult to ignore. Now, we are finding out more information. Maybe Lamar was a little bit more hurt than we anticipated. It doesn't look like he's going to play on Sunday, and it's a really, really important game. It was just his energy about it. He just looked like somebody who just didn't want to continue the fight. He got up. He walks over to the sideline. He throws his helmet. He's still sitting there. He just looked like he had just checked out of the game. You know what he looked like? He looked like Scottie Pippen on that one episode of The Last Dance. Remember when they called the play for Tony Kukoc and Pippen's just mad that the play wasn't for him? That was the same kind of energy that you got from Lamar Jackson on Sunday as he looked up at the scoreboard, looked at how bad his team was losing, looked at how he was playing, how the rest of his team was playing, how his defense was playing, and just, you know what, hey, we'll get him next week. I didn't really see much of a fire or a frustration or any of that from their leader. Their leader seemed like, eh. So the rest of the team, they kind of played like, eh. That's what I noticed from the Baltimore Ravens. A couple more cuts here that we got for the Baltimore Ravens. So Kyle Hamilton, who is one of their star defensive players, they ain't got many, but he's one of their stars. He called the fan base spoiled. I mean, you can't think that was going to go over well with the team. Not when y'all are the worst defense in the league and not when you guys just got whipped for a full 60 minutes by the Chiefs. You can't fix your mouth to call the fan base spoiled. You ain't won nothing.
With Lamar going down, I honestly just feel like it just feels like this is the end of the era with Lamar and Henry. Henry's not going to be able to carry this team. He's just not. He's in great shape. He's got a good diet, good work ethic, but he just can't do it all by himself. And the last thing I'd like to say, well, also Kyle Hamilton saying we're spoiled. How about you share your salary with us? Maybe we'll be spoiled that way. Or maybe
it doesn't work that way.
Thanks for the call, man.
Does not work that way.
He said, why do you share your – Kyle, why did you think that that was a good idea? I mean, I'm just – this might be just PR 101. I just – there should never, ever be a time in which you as the athlete call the fans spoiled, even if they might be spoiled. Like, I'm serious. Even if they might be. Just sometimes, you can't beat the internet. Like, if you're somebody and right now the internet has decided to gang up on you and everybody's making fun of you, you know what you should probably do? Just find something else to do. The internet always moves on. You can't beat the internet. You know what you're also not going to beat? Sports fans. They got long memories about these kind of things, especially when you're losing. You might can call them spoiled if you're winning. Like, oh, that's funny. You can't call them spoiled if you're in the middle of losing and you're the best player on a bad defense. That's just not good. That's how things are right now in Baltimore. They ain't good. Last one.
I'll never trust Harbaugh again. He never tells the truth when somebody's hurt. Lamar looked like a quitter yesterday. The only two people I think was trying to play was Hill and the guy 38 who's a walk-on. I think his name is Martin.
It's a rough time right now to be a Ravens fan, man. I would say I'm pulling for you, but that would just be a lie. I'm not pulling for you. In fact, I kind of like that this is happening to the Ravens. It's just interesting to see. They have been one of the models of consistency in the National Football League. And I don't care how up you are. Everything that is a results-oriented business is a what have you done for me lately? And what it looks like you're about to hand Baltimore fans is a 6-11 season. That's what it looked like to me. It looked to me like y'all got 7-10 energy is what the Ravens look like to me. They look like this is going to be a rebuilding season. That team looks bad. And they are headed towards what would appear to be some dark times. Their quarterback could be out for the month of October. Their running back has not rushed for more than 60 yards in each of his last three games. Their left tackle is out. Their number one pass rusher is out. Their best linebacker is out. One of their best corners is out. I mean, I'm looking around. I don't even know half of these guys are playing for the Ravens. So as they got a very important game against the Texans coming up this week, they got a very important month. They got to turn things around very quickly, and I'm not sure if they got the ammunition and the firepower to be able to do it. Coming up on the other side, we'll be joined in studio by Mitchell Schwartz. We'll get his thoughts on the Chiefs' offensive line. We'll also get his thoughts on the Chiefs' run game. That's all coming up. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison. Watch the show on YouTube by subscribing to the 965 YouTube channel. The Drive brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this. 965, The Fan.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I need a job with a steady paycheck.
I need a job that offers health care on day one for me and my kids.
I want a job where I can get certified in technical roles, like robotics or software engineering.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their skills and their paycheck by enrolling in free skills training programs and apprenticeships. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
Browns
why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Really happy to be joined in studio by our next guest. His name is Mitchell Schwartz, all-pro right tackle, friend of the show. Joins us to talk about the Chiefs offensive line, the run game, the offense, 1587 prime. There's a lot to talk to you about. How you doing, my man?
Doing good. How are you?
Doing great, man. That is as well as I've seen the Chiefs play since Taylor Swift Day at Arrowhead. I mean, it was a complete and just an absolute destruction on offense, defense. We'll talk about the special teams part of it and if you're worried or not. But just on offense and defense, I mean, that's as well as the Chiefs have played in probably a year, year and a half.
Yeah, defensively especially, I think we're, especially the Philly game and this game, maybe underselling how good the defense has been since week one. Obviously, week one was not the best showing, and especially against a division opponent. But I'm more leaning towards chalking that game up specifically as just like a really weird travel situation and kind of an off-script game that we can almost discard from our memory. But week two, I mean, shut Philly down in a way that they haven't been shut down in a while. And I know they've had offensive struggles since then as well. But that was kind of the first time that we've seen that offense look quite so, you know, suffocated. And then this week, we haven't seen Lamar look like that, I don't know, 4 years, 5 years. Legitimately, just a fantastic performance from the defense. So as excited as we are about the offense, I feel like everything runs through the offense in the city. Almost more encouraged with the defense, which is saying something because of how great the offense played.
We asked this question yesterday, so I'll ask it to you. If there is 100% of the pie, how much of the performance do you give to the Chiefs maybe turning the corner, figuring some things out, getting back Xavier Worthy, etc.,
or the Ravens not being the team that we thought they were, the defense, the injuries, all of those things. I had it at around 55%, 60% Chiefs. I mean, it's impossible to, I think, at least point out the fact that the Ravens were missing five starters on defense and just they couldn't take away anything that Kansas City wanted to do in their offense. I think that is part of the story, but I do think having Xavier Worthy back and that explosiveness, I think using Breshad Smith and trying to implement him into the offense, I give the Chiefs a lot of credit for evolving, and I think it was a glimpse into what their offense can be in a couple of weeks when they get everybody back. How would you kind of divvy up the performance on Sunday?
Yeah, I think five starters maybe coming into the game, and by the end it was seven or eight because Roquan went down, and one of these or two of their DBs went down as well. So I almost look at that in terms of like positions or different parts of the offense. You know, offensive line wise, it was the best game, and you look at the two deep, and most of it was, you know, twos and threes in there, and a lot of guys that most of us don't know the names of. So from that perspective, I'm always going to give the O-line props. They played well. Like, I had very few games in my career, even against backups, where you just feel like you play a pretty good game and don't really get beat. And a lot of those guys played pretty good games and didn't really get beat. You know, much has been talked about Juwan, no penalties, you know, none of the kind of the bad negative plays. Looked like he did really well in pass protection. I think one of the stats on Josh, you know, no pressures throughout the whole game. Or maybe it was Kingsley, no pressures throughout the game. Josh had a couple in there. But that, I would say, is a little bit more Baltimore related. So I'd go like, you know, maybe 60% because of Baltimore's personnel, 65%. I mean, there are games where you're going against a guy and you're like, not that it's not fair, but like, yeah, this game should be easier for me. Now, it's great to see the execution. It's great to see all that happening. So then, you know, you look at the scheme, Xavier, some of those things, that's where I lean more towards it being Chiefs, maybe, you know, 60 to 70% Chiefs related from those aspects in terms of hitting some downfield passes and under center, some more play action, a little bit more commitment to the play action, to the run sell, getting some linebackers to suck up. Because I think when teams see us go under center, one, they're not really afraid of us running the ball. And two, it's almost like, okay, well, here comes this designer play action because they're under center. It's not part of the identity of the offense, which is what I've been arguing the last few weeks. So I think more of a commitment to that, more of a commitment to that being part of the offense and not just certain things that look good on film or certain things you think you have an advantage towards. So, yeah, I think overall it falls pretty closely to 50-50. But the NFL's hard, man. It doesn't really matter who's out there. You know, I've had plenty of games. You can go, like, preseason games where I get beat by guys who don't end up making rosters. Like, everyone who's on a field is there for a reason. So there's an element that even if it's a depleted roster, even if it's guys that, you know, quote-unquote shouldn't be starting or shouldn't be getting that much playing time, it's still football. Everyone's, you know, trying really hard, and it's still difficult to perform as well as the Chiefs did. So I leave feeling more optimistic, even though I want to say 50-50-ish, about the Chiefs because you still have to perform that way. You still have to show it.
I'm looking at the FanDuel odds, and right now it's plus 260 for the Ravens to miss the playoffs. I took that bet earlier today. Quarterback might miss 3 to 4 weeks. Their left tackle is hurt right now. Their best pass rusher is out right now. I've been making the comparison. They feel like last year's San Francisco team that just everything that could go wrong just went wrong for San Francisco last year, and they just ended up outright missing the postseason. Do you think the Ravens can turn this thing around given how depleted their team is right now?
I can, because they just have to beat Cincy, who's a pretty bad team. They have to beat Cleveland, who overall is not the best team. So it kind of just comes down to almost a Baltimore versus Pittsburgh race. I still think Pittsburgh just keeps smoking mirrors and whiling away. There's some stats on Rodgers, like his average depth of target is like crazy low, and his time to throw is crazy low. So he's getting away with some stuff that you would think is regression likely, and so maybe their offense is going to look quite as good once they go up against some better defenses, better teams. So yeah, it's the question is, can they go 9-8? Probably doesn't win the AFC North, but 10-7 and win four out of the six division games and do what they need to do? I'd say yes. I mean, even if they're 2-5, you know, and they start getting guys back and they start getting healthy, Lamar comes back, are we discounting their ability to go 8-1 over the next 9 games? I'm not. I mean, the Baltimore team that we saw in weeks 1 and 2, quarters 1 through 3 of the Buffalo game and 1 through 4 of the Cleveland game was probably the best team in football. They're only 2 weeks removed from that. Now, again, their defensive tackle, Matabuke, he's gone for the season. Obviously, a huge loss for them. Everything's kind of up the middle with them. Roquan, even before the injury this game, I don't know if he was maybe injured the past couple of weeks, fighting through something, but he hasn't looked quite like himself all this year, from what I've seen. So it's going to be a lot to overcome, but it just gets back to, can you win a division that now has two teams that are going to be pretty awful, one team that kind of wins with smoke and mirrors, and your own team that is battling through injuries. And I think Baltimore is good enough to do that, yeah.
Right now we're joined in studio by Mitchell Shorts. Let's talk about the Chiefs. Let's talk about the O-line. How do the Chiefs replicate the performance that they got from their offensive line? If you look at the numbers, this is the best that Kingsley has looked in his NFL career. Jawan Taylor played a very clean game. The offensive line was A+. They gave Pat a lot of time. They utilized the running backs out of the backfield. How do the Chiefs continue this momentum with their offensive line?
You just keep doing it. I mean, you hope to go against teams that are a little bit, beat down. Now, I think Trayvon Walker injured his wrist last week, looking ahead to this game. And so likely one of those defensive ends isn't going to be out there. I mean, Josh, I think Hines Allen or Allen Hines always mess that up, is a really good rusher. So the tackles are going to have to be prepared for that. You know, Armstead's out there. He's a pretty good player that can play, D-tackle and defensive end. So you're probably going to play some better personnel this week. But that's where O-line-wise, like, you're not going to necessarily look at it and say, well, they were terrible and I was only good because of them. I shouldn't feel confident the next week. You're going to say, all right, those guys weren't that great, but I played really well. I improved. I did these things that I wanted to see for myself. And so you get, a disproportionate confidence boost to what you should because of your performance against a depleted team. And yeah, I think just plugging away. I mean, Jawan, I don't know if it was a conscious thing. Maybe the coaches told him, like, dude, this is your last chance. Any more of these unforced errors, Jalen's in, you're out. I don't know whether that happened or it just happened to be a clean game. But blocking-wise, again, he did pretty well, aside from just a lack of penalties. I mean, Trey's had a little bit of an up-and-down year, especially for what we expect from him overall and then the contract. Usually when guys are like that, I kind of assume that there's some sort of injury thing lurking there. Guys don't just, play below standards for a few weeks and not have something else nagging. So that would be my suspicion. I mean, Creed's played really well. He's had a couple kind of weird looking plays for him, but some things that are probably describable or, rational once you dig into the why of why some of the things look the way they do. And the left side I think keeps improving. Kingsley's getting a lot better, to your point. I thought he had a relatively good first couple weeks. The problem with him, especially for people that don't specialize in O-line, is it's really easy to see when a guy gets beat pretty bad. We can all see when a guy gets smoked or a guy gives up a lot of penetration in the run game. And unfortunately for Kingsley, the times he does lose tend to be a little bit more of the splash play variety where it's more obvious that he is losing. So I think some of those stick out in our mind maybe a little bit more than guys who lose more often but lose a little bit slower. But the progress is there. I mean, 2 weeks ago against the Giants, Dexter Lawrence is the best D-tackle this side of Chris. Had a great game against him, had some really nice one-on-one pass pro reps against Abdul Carter, who we've seen make some guys look really silly in the middle when he's been kind of standing up and lurking in there. So a ton of progression. I think Josh honestly looked better weeks 1 and 2. Week 3 didn't look quite as good. I think he was trying some different technique stuff that doesn't work quite as well for him. And I think he's going to, look like he went back to a bit more of his quote-unquote personal technique that I think he's really successful with last week. So hopefully he sticks with that. A lot of good stuff throughout. And this is what I'm always saying, I'm always pushing for, man. When Pat has a nice pocket, when he feels comfortable, obviously it helps to have X back there creating space and getting open the way he is. But when Pat can stand in there, be comfortable, complete the follow through, rip the ball, we see, that 2018, 2019, 2020 up through 22 version that I think we're all accustomed to seeing.
I do want to get your thoughts on this. I'm not naive to think that you can go from being the most penalized player in the last 2.5 years to not think that we won't have another conversation about Jawan Taylor and penalties. Is it just doing a better job of communicating with the official on where you should line up correctly? Like some of those, not talking about holding penalties, but I mean like some of those illegal procedure, false start penalties. How can some of those be eliminated and cleaned up where we agree the Chief just got bigger games coming up down the road against more formidable defensive lines? How does he clean up some of those plays?
Yeah, I mean, there's two elements. There's the alignment element and there's the timing element. He's going to get called for a few holdings. That's just kind of what he's shown historically. He's a guy who is going to hold a couple times throughout the course of a season, and that's okay. I think we'd all be okay with no more false starts, no more illegal formations, and one holding penalty every 3 weeks. I think we'd all gladly take that for the level of play he does give the team. So from the timing perspective, you know, he obviously likes to get off the ball as, you know, close to the exact moment Creed starts moving as possible. That is a decision he makes on in terms of when he tries to move. You can make a decision to go slightly slower and to not jump it quite as much, which seemed like he made that decision last week a little bit. And then there's the alignment element, which is a little bit trickier because also you as a tackle get aligned off your guard. You don't align off your center. Like, you get up there, the guard is on one of the lines first. He creates his own space from the center in terms of how far away, the width, and then also the depth off the ball. And this is the thing, historically, Chiefs guards have been closer to the line of scrimmage. And so tackles feel like they don't have enough space back off the line of scrimmage, which is what Juwan's always aligning up too deep about. And so if you're used to, you know, a certain depth that the guard's given you, and all of a sudden the guard gets back 6-8 inches and you're setting up the same distance, you know, depth-wise from the guard, now you can be offsides, not really realize it or feel it, but just because the guard's moving things around, maybe on a run play he likes to get closer, on a pass play he likes to get further back. So I think there are probably legitimately sometimes that happens. Tackles, for the most part, want to be as deep as possible on every single play, run or pass, where guards like to kind of mix that up a little bit more. So I think just, you know, he and Trey being as consistent as possible and not, you know, making that decision to jump to snap count quite as much. But this week, I mean, it's going to be, I believe, a road game, and that's where the silent count becomes an issue. You know, how consistent is Creed? Can Juwan trust that? So my gut says we're more likely to see a false start this week than not, but I'm hopeful that they kind of get all those things down, because that's, I think, the frustrating thing is it feels like something that's so avoidable because those are things in his control, you know, where you line up and how you time the snap count. So he did a great job last week, and hopefully he continues that.
I don't want to rain on the parade, but there was, I guess, one flaw in the offense. They ran it 24 times with their running backs and got 78 yards. Like, that has been an issue with this team this year. They have been unable to jumpstart the offense from the running game. They had been unable to get it going. You played on the offensive line. What are you noticing right now? Why have the Chiefs struggled to run the football effectively with their running backs?
Well, I think they're still finding an identity offensively, especially run game-wise. I mean, I've talked online a bit about how difficult it is to be a shotgun running team without the threat of a quarterback pulling the ball and keeping it. Now, occasionally there are some plays that maybe look like read options and the defensive end still flat-foots it and Pat's able to pretend like he's, you know, pulling it. I don't think he's ran a legitimate read option in quite a while. Kudos to the offense for rolling out there and having defensive ends still think that that's a legitimate possibility. But, you know, in a run game, you're typically one behind the count. So when you're looking at, you know, if there's one running back in the backfield, six guys on the line of scrimmage, five O-linemen and a tight end, and a quarterback, the quarterback isn't really part of the run scheme. And so that's where in shotgun you get that read option ability. And now instead of having to find a guy to block a defensive end, you put him in a bind and you theoretically make him wrong. If he runs to the running back, you pull it, the quarterback keeps it. If he stays flat-footed or goes to the quarterback, you give it. And so you're taking a guy that you didn't have to have a blocker for, putting him in a bind, and he can't make a right decision. When the quarterback's not a threat to do that, then you have to find a way to block that guy. So whether that's a tight end or whoever else, a sixth lineman, some other way to block him becomes more difficult. And in shotgun, especially just by the nature of the running back being offset and towards the backside of a play. Now, the Chiefs do a lot of that kind of cross-formation running back, and then he comes toward the front side. So they play around with the angles a little bit to try to gain some ability to manipulate the defense. But, you know, in a traditional under-center inside zone run, you're further away from the defensive end by alignment because the running back's in the center of the formation, and then you start moving away from the defensive end. Inside zone, you always have to account for the backside defensive end. Outside zone, you don't have to. That's where under center, you can put that guy in a bind with nakeds and with rollouts. And again, if the defensive end is going to crash down the line of scrimmage, hopefully people are able to kind of visualize this. I'm trying to do this as, you know, easily as possible for those listening. But from under center, you know, if the defensive end's crashing down the line of scrimmage and tackles the running back from behind, you know, we got nakeds, we got boots. We're going to make that guy pay. You know, we're going to fake the handoff. He's going to crash down the line. Quarterback's going to roll out. if the defensive end is worried about the bootleg at all, that's when you can run outside zone with ease, and the running back is always going to be able to run away from that position, and the cutback's going to be there. So that's the thing that from under center, I feel like we don't really have quite that identity to run those plays. Don't do it quite as much. Our play actions are a little bit more of, you know, the quote unquote drop back variety. And from shotgun, the angles are so messed up. I know a lot of people, I see it online, are frustrated with kind of outside zone runs from shotgun. I've never really liked them. I think, again, the timing, the rhythm is a little bit messed up because the running back is starting over the left. If it's a outside zone to the right, the running back starting over the left tackle. And then he's crossing the formation. They're doing a mesh with the quarterback. He's running lateral to the line as opposed to, you know, maybe a 45-degree angle downhill if he's in the I formation or in a traditional under center set. It just makes all the elements of running an offense more difficult when you're operating from shotgun. And this is a shotgun team, and the quarterback isn't, you know, a read threat the way Lamar is, the way even Josh Allen is, or some of the other guys. So trying to figure out that balance, that identity. And again, two new guys on the left side, what do they do best? Do they do inside zone? Do they do, you know, pulling? We haven't seen a ton of Josh pulling for as athletic as he is and as good in space as he is. Are they better on gap schemes? Are they better on the front side? So blending all those things that I just, you know, kind of rambled for 5 or 6 minutes on is pretty difficult. And I think the team is still trying to find what that identity looks like. And we've seen historically this team is comfortable, you know, spending the first half of the season finding out who they are so they can be stronger in December and in January. And, you know, I think that's the progression that we're going to see.
Right now we're joined in studio by Mitchell Shorts. It's funny you mentioned that, like, kind of using this early period. I think the best way to kind of unlock this run game is to give Breshard Smith just more opportunities. Like, I don't want to say I'm completely out on Isaiah Pacheco, but there was a certain measure of, like, violence that he ran with that just, he doesn't seem to be nearly as sure of himself, as confident. He's not hitting the holes. You mentioned the vision. He just doesn't seem to have that. And as I saw them start to implement Breshard Smith into the offense, I just kind of saw what this could be in November, December. Hey, there's something in this offensive room, but to me, you got to be willing to kind of go away from what maybe worked for you for 2-3 years, and you got to be willing to try something different. Are you noticing that when it comes to Isaiah Pacheco? What's different about him now that you maybe didn't see 2 years ago pre-injury with him?
Yeah, I mean, it's just natural to last year come back from a broken leg and not be quite as effective. I mean, I don't think anyone expected that. But this year, it does seem like a couple of the missed vision runs are a little bit more, you know, highlighted. I put one on social media myself that I was a little bit frustrated by, a short yardage play that, you know, kind of exemplifies why Kareem gets a lot of those carries. But he's still running hard. He's still, you know, trying his hardest. I don't think it's an effort issue. I don't think it's a willingness to be physical or a willingness to, you know, worry about the leg or anything like that. It just seems like potentially there's just a little bit of, I don't know, hesitation is, again, not the right word, but there's just a difference in how he's seeing the game versus maybe how he saw it a couple years ago. And I think that's the ultimate what if for me, and I know other people have talked about it, but Jamal Charles in this offense, the space it creates, you know, I've wanted for a long time just to get a fast guy. Because if the run game is going to average 3.5 yards a carry anyway, why not average 3 yards a carry with a fast guy who, you know, can't be physical and can't push the pile forward the way those two guys can, but can hit the 60-yarder, you know, can find a crease, can use the space that's created structurally. Again, shotgun offense, facing a lot of too high, a lot of softer coverage, especially now that X is back, going to be even more so when Rasheed's back. And we have to make teams pay for running too high. Like, they're going to keep running it against us unless we run the ball so effectively that they say, man, we need someone else in the box. And we haven't been effective enough run game-wise. Maybe it's getting a guy with more juice in there who can get that one little crack, one little seam, and boom, he hits it quicker than the other two can, and he gets to the second level and can pull away from people. Obviously, she showed really good you know, contact balance and physicality on that run up the sideline, able to get all those extra yards, and again, the willingness to dish out some contact. So, yeah, I think we'd like to see some more carries for him. And, you know, if he comes along a little bit and it's more of a, you know, 10-10-10 idea that he gets 10 touches, Isaiah gets 10 touches, and Kareem gets 10 touches, you know, I think we'd be a little bit happier with that. And just that juice to the offense that I feel like we haven't seen from that position since, you know, Pacheco a couple years ago.
I've never asked you this before. As a football player, just, I guess, in reference to what happened with Tyreek, Is that ever in the back of your mind? Do you just not allow yourself to think like that? I mean, Tyreek is probably having the best game that he has had so far this season. It looks like he is en route to having a really good day. Next thing you know, his career could possibly be over in just an absolute instance with a terrifying injury. This has to be something that football players just live with. Is this something you just block out of your mind? How do you kind of operate knowing that every snap can be your last?
Yeah, I mean, you notice it more in a contract year, that's for sure. You're definitely more aware of that. But I think you just assume it's not going to happen to you, or if you do get injured, it's going to be of the more mild variety. You know, I don't think anyone expects to tear their knee or to have such a freaky injury the way Tyreek did. So you just kind of have trust that it's not going to happen to you. And if it does, it's just unfortunate and you got to figure it out from there. But it's a tough one to see a teammate, you know, be in that position. In college, I had a running back, job at best, who, you know, dove into the end zone, kind of got hit from up underneath, launched him higher, came down from, I don't know, 8 or 9 feet high, and he was out for a while and, you know, had kind of the fencing situation, and that's as scary as you can get, and you just don't really know how to continue on the next few plays once play continues. Similar, you know, Miami last night, the guy's in a, I guess, shock, you know, Tyreek himself, and then whether other guys saw it or not, just seeing your teammate feeling that kind of pain is really tricky. So from the player perspective, you don't dwell on that too much. You know that risk is there. You kind of assume that the worst thing possible isn't going to happen to you, and you honestly just hope you can get a second contract before something like that does happen.
Right now, we're joined in studio by Mitchell Schwartz. Coming up on the other side, I want to get your thoughts on 1587. You're one of the few people that I know that have eaten there before, and you're a food connoisseur. I want to know what you find out about it. I also want to play a little playoff contender. We'll go through some of the teams in the league, and we'll see if you're buying or selling what they've done so far in the first month of the season. We got Mitchell Schwartz in studio. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
This is Wyatt Thompson from K-State, and you're listening to The Drive with CDOT right here on 96.5 The Fan and the Odyssey app.
Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
To remind you that 60% of sales on Amazon come from independent sellers, here's John from Devil Dog Pet Company.
We run our family business from Sterling Heights, Michigan, but we can reach customers all over the country thanks to Amazon. Good boy.
Shop small business on Amazon.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Very happy right now to be joined by Mitchell Schwartz. Joshua Briscoe is going to join us coming up at the top of the hour. He does the Chiefs pre and post game. Mitch, you were one of the few people that I know that have been to 1587 Prime. I've not yet got a chance to go. How was it? Did you like it?
Oh yeah, it's fantastic. It's legitimately, I think, one of the better restaurants in the city already. They had a bite of steak that was the best steak I've ever had in my life. Everything else was really good. Great. You know, live music, the decor coming from my wife, not from me, was awesome. So, yeah, they basically, I think, nailed everything restaurant-wise.
What did you order? What was your meal?
I don't know that we don't have time for that. We got, it felt like half the menu. For the meal, we got a couple larger steaks to share. So the one that was the best bite I've ever had is the Wagyu ribeye tomahawk, which is admittedly a very expensive and high-priced steak. But I would say it was worth it from the sense that it was the best, you know, steak I've ever had. We also had a Delmonico steak to share for the table. That was really good. Appetizer-wise, lobster rolls were great. They had a Wagyu pastrami, which isn't quite like Jewish deli pastrami, which, you know, me being Jewish and loving that, but it is pretty close, and I don't think it's supposed to be exactly Jewish deli anyway, but it was really good. And some scallops that, you know, people said were the best they've ever had. I'm not the hugest scallop guy. Just even the salad, the chopped salad that we had was really good. They had four desserts, and we had, I think, chocolate cake, carrot cake.
Y'all had a feast!
Dude, I'm telling you. And the craziest part, so I don't know if it was just good eating or portion control. I mean, we took some of the desserts home and a little bit of the steak, but both Brooke and I kind of realized after the fact that we didn't feel as huge or, you know, bloated or whatever it is as you would expect after such a nice meal. Especially, I mean, we had some of their cocktails as well, which were really good. And, you know, not the hugest drink person, but I thought they did that, you know, at a really high level as well. So yeah, just leaving, like eating this really awesome, you know, kind of heavy food, rich food with Wagyu, and leaving feeling in a pretty good spot physically. So that was an unexpected development too, because usually after those meals, it can be a little bit tricky when you get home for a couple hours trying to, you know, find that comfortable spot laying down.
So before we get you out of here, I want to take a trip really quickly through the NFL standings. We are 1 month into the NFL season, so we've got a chance to see most of these teams at their best and at their worst, and we'll get a feel for who you like as a playoff contender and who are you still needing to see a little bit more time not believing in. Rob, hit the music! Let's start with, there's only 4-2-2 teams in the AFC. Let's go to one of them, the Denver Broncos. Where are you at on the Broncos so far in the first month of the season?
More pessimistic than optimistic, but they might sneak in because the rest of the AFC doesn't feel that great, is kind of what I'll say about them. Bo Nix doesn't look like he's taking a step forward. Defense looks like it still should be one of the best in the NFL. Those two edge rushers, man, they can get after it. Zach Allen's really good inside. You know, secondary's, you know, pretty top notch as well.
Looking at the AFC South, which team are you a bigger believer in? Is it the Indianapolis Colts or the Jacksonville Jaguars? Two teams right now that sit at 3-1.
Colts, I think for sure. I don't know why. I mean, this honestly feels like it's playing out a lot like the Sam Darnold situation from last year, where you have this kind of awesome year. The record's really great. Maybe by the end of the year, you see some underlying stuff that it's not as good as the record indicates. And then, you know, playoffs come in and you get smoked and the season's over. But I'm buying the Colts a little bit more. Offensive line is, you know, one of the better ones. And you kind of just have to roll with that. I don't think Jacksonville has the top end in terms of the offensive line quite the way Indianapolis does.
This isn't a contender or pretender question. I'm just curious to get your thoughts on it. The Eagles aren't impressive, but man, they just figure out a way to win every single week. I can't think of a time where a team didn't have a passing yard in the second half of the game and won. I mean, that's like some Tim Tebow back with the Broncos kind of voodoo magic. It feels crazy to ask you what's wrong with the Eagles when they're 4-0 and arguably the best team in the league, but something just feels off with Philadelphia for whatever reason.
Yeah, I mean, we talked all offseason about Detroit losing two coordinators and that being the issue, and it might be that, you know, Philly losing the offensive coordinator might be the biggest coordinator loss that we're seeing right now. And we've seen historically that team, when they're not playing well, offensively especially, they don't really love how things are going when things aren't in sync with the quarterback. So we'll see personality-wise how that goes. Seems like AJ's already a little bit frustrated and not too happy with what's going on over there. The parallel is the Chiefs team last year that everyone said wasn't that great and just kept finding ways to win. So, you know, I think overall I'm not too down on Philly in general, but yeah, I think they're going to feel like this is 2 years ago a lot more than they're going to feel like this is last year for them.
I feel hoodwinked by the Green Bay Packers. After that week one demolishing of Detroit, I was already doing a victory lap. I picked the Packers to be the one seed in the NFC at the beginning of the season, so I felt really good. I mean, they lost to the Browns, and then they gave up 40 points and tied the Cowboys on Sunday Night Football. I mean, that's still a good team. They'll probably still make the postseason, but there's a lot of work to be done right now with the Packers. It sounds like you aren't sure if they're making the postseason.
No, I'm not sure that Dallas is a good team.
Oh, okay. No, they're bad. No, Dallas is not good.
Green Bay, I think, bought into their own hype a little bit too much. You know, you can't come out after being 2-0 and talk about, you know, running the table and potentially going undefeated and all those things. You could tell after
at 2-0 they're having that conversation.
I know. Well, you know, some guys aren't used to winning, and you know, they get a little bit too excited. Yeah, I think they're not last year's Saints that went, you know, 2-0 and scored 5 million points, and everyone thought, you know, had the best new creative offense in the NFL. But I think they're slightly more there than not. Now the flip side is Micah had like an insane game against Dallas. Dak just kind of had a more insane game, and he played one of his best games overall, and was getting the ball out super quick. So. Yeah, I still would be more optimistic about Green Bay than not, but these last 2 weeks are pretty rough, and the O-line's still there, you know, the defensive line especially is still there. I think Jordan Love's still a pretty good player. I really like LaFleur as a coach, but I think they need to, you know, be humbled a little bit, and it seems like maybe they have been now.
There's three teams in the NFC West that are 3-1. Every team in that division is 500 or better through the first month of the season. San Francisco, Seattle, and the Rams, they're all at 3-1. Which of those teams do you like the most?
Rams. I think that's a pretty easy one for me, especially as, you know, injuries keep mounting for San Francisco for the 97th season in a row.
That is our guy, Mitchell Schwartz, joining us in studio, playing a little NFL contender or pretender. Really excited to see how the season continues to progress. You are right. We're seeing it around the league. Like, you got to adjust to the injuries that are happening around the league. It kind of goes to me of, I know we're going to have this conversation at some point about the league thinking we need more regular season games. Like, we've got a month of the season. I mean, almost a quarter of the league has lost their starting quarterback in some capacity. Like, I don't know how we think that more football is going to lead to a better product. It's just going to be more backups, more injuries, more all of those things.
I would say the NFL has never contended that more football is going to lead to a better product. It's just going to lead to more football. And I think that's been the biggest misconception throughout this whole process, that the league maybe cares about the pure quality of football on the field. If they did, again, Thursday games, I always liked them. I loved having a week where you don't really have to practice and then 4 days off on the back end. But I think we can all agree that people aren't going to be as fresh as if they played on Sunday.
And that's going to affect Brock Purdy for this upcoming season.
I know. He's probably going to be out because his toe's sore. So there's another game that, you know, one of the top quarterbacks. I don't know how people think about that. But one of the higher-priced quarterbacks
that's fair.
is going to be affected by that. I think, I mean, I know we're pushing here, but I think there's a much larger issue with preparation and with training camp and how teams are getting ready for the season. I think that's a much bigger issue than whether it's 16 or 17 or 18 games.
That is our guy, Mitchell Schwartz, joining us in studio. Mitch, man, always good talking football with you. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll be joined by Joshua Briscoe of the Chiefs Radio Network. Keep it right here. It's 96.5 The Fan.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
To remind you that 60% of sales on Amazon come from independent sellers, here's John from Devil Dog Pet Company.
We run our family business from Sterling Heights, Michigan, but we can reach customers all over the country thanks to Amazon. Good boy.
Shop small business on Amazon.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.